As you heard from Tanya, today is World Communion Sunday, the annual Sunday on which Christian churches all over this planet commemorate Jesus' final meals with his disciples. This is not everyone's favorite Christian observance, and that's understandable. The original evening in which it took place was anything but a happy occasion. Jesus was grim and he was stressed. The disciples around him were agitated and frightened and irritable. And as if to make things even more depressing, Jesus starts talking to them about one of them betraying him, resulting in his probable death. And then he somberly invites each of them to eat a piece of bread and to take a swallow of wine. One could argue that it was the kind of evening that one tries to forget, not reenact for the next 2,000 years. Not even a full day later, those disciples ended up spectators to Jesus' crucifixion. That's where it all hit bottom. One of them, Judas, goes off to commit suicide. Another, Peter, is cringing in deep self-hatred and bitterness and remorse. The 10 others were scattered and in hiding. All of them were trying to come to terms with the fact that this, which God could never allow to happen, had happened. The God who had come to seem so present and so real to them because of Jesus. He'd done nothing. He had not lifted a divine finger, not even to relieve the agony inflicted in that horrible type of execution. Well, who needs a God like that? One who allows a mockery of justice like this. A God who permits the very finest of human beings to be tortured and humiliated and lynched. A God who apparently doesn't care about the hopes and morale of good, devout people. Instead of helping, there is only this flagrant absence, this silence of God. Now, if you've ever landed in anything similar to that bleak, hopeless moment, you know something about how lost and how depleted it leaves one. It was an incredibly crucial moment if they survived spiritually at all. Theirs would be a totally different understanding of God's presence and work within us and among us. For example, gone forever would be any belief to the effect that God always treats his own people nicely. Gone the belief that good people are always rewarded by God and all the bad people are punished. Gone was the belief that godly people won't have to struggle with the doubts and the frustrations. Gone was the belief that this is a moral universe, in which good always has an automatic edge over evil. No, what they saw, what they just went through, seemed to indicate one of two things. Either God was incompetent or didn't exist, or they had just gotten a message to the effect that they needed to grow up in their faith. That they needed to grow up in their understanding of God's way with us. It was, of course, the second of those two possibilities. Part of the spiritual journey of everyone who gets beyond the childhood of his faith includes coming to understand that God is what might be called a tough love God. A God who insists upon relating to us as adults, who does not intrude upon our freedom even when we wish that He would. A God who has higher hopes and expectations for us than we have for ourselves. And a God who moves with us through struggles and troubles, but doesn't rescue us from them. It is a God who respects us too much to baby us or to treat us like puppets. Now, you might be able to get some feeling from it, from this excerpt from one of the books of the late Erna Bombeck. And I don't remember which preacher I stole this from. Erna begins. She says, "You don't love me. How many times have your kids laid that one on you?" Then she goes on to tell what the reply would be if she ever blurted it out. She says, "I loved you enough to bug you about where you were going and with whom and what time you would come back. I loved you enough to make you return that candy bar with a bite already out of it to the drugstore and to confess that I stole it. I loved you enough to stand over you for 2 hours while you cleaned your room, a job that would have taken me no more than 15 minutes. I loved you enough to say, 'Yes, go ahead and go,' when you decided to go out with your friends on Mother's Day. I loved you enough to let you see the anger, to see the disappointment, to see the tears in my eyes. I loved you enough not to make excuses for your bad manners and your lack of respect. I loved you enough to let you stumble, to fall, to hurt, and to fail. I loved you enough to let you take responsibility for and live with the consequences of your own actions. I loved you enough to shove you off my lap and to let go of your hands, to be mute in the face of your pleadings so that you had to stand alone. But most of all, I loved you enough to say no when you hated me for it. That was the hardest part of all." It's not hard for us to see the analogy between what was her take on good parenting and what needs to be understood of God's way with you and with me. Letting go of those childish, patronizing pictures of God can be a terribly tough transition. As those disciples of Jesus discovered on that awful weekend. But it definitely was the making of them spiritually. It was as if God were saying to humankind, "I love you enough not to protect you or to rescue you from the risks and the pains of living. I love you enough to insist that you learn to embrace the full consequences, not only of your grandeur and your good, which you are a part of, but also of the wrongs which you permit and you do. I love you enough to respect your freedom, including the freedom to destroy life on earth, if that's what you insist upon doing. I love you too much to turn you into something like mice in a maze, by dangling cheap, predictable rewards in front of you, or smiting you with quick punishment for each and every error. I love you too much to be for you your celestial or spiritual errand boy. I love you too much to let you vie with believing that if things ever get really bad, I'll step in and I'll make it all okay again. In other words, I love you enough to have allowed that crucifixion to go on. For if I could not, would you have ever really believed that justice and reconciliation and peace were your calling, not to be pushed off on me? It's a difficult truth to accept. But with the exception of Judas, they did end up getting the message. And in a whole new way, they went forth from that time on fire with the Spirit, with a sense of there being God's presence and power and forgiveness and love. So as grim in some ways as that Last Supper was, here 2,000 years later, we continue to reenact it. And every time we do, it reminds us that we're called to pull our weight in the world. That in fact, we are joint creators with God. A God who, through people just like you and me, and in ways we cannot see and may never fully understand, God is pushing back the darkness with whatever light is yours and mine to give, and is indeed weaving the fabric of good here on earth. It is good that we gather about this table and remember. Amen.